Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. It just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. You have a happy host, Doug Kazarian, and a not so happy producer, Travis. I'm sorry.
Can we get to the interviews?
Look, man, what would you rather be? Just a doormat like Northwestern in the Big Ten, or are you, you know?
Well, that's a dumb question, because obviously you want to be the better team, but that doesn't mean you want to...
I know, I'm just trying to babble. I'm just trying to mix things up. Look, dude, somebody had to lose. It's a game where you want both teams to win. Look, it was... My issue is it wasn't a clean game. It wasn't a clean field. It wasn't cleanly officiated. It wasn't cleanly coached, and it wasn't cleanly played. There were mental mistakes on both. I enjoyed the game. It was drama.
It wasn't an all-time classic.
It was because it was so poorly done by so many facets, including the grounds crew.
Like, I'll take the Georgia-Oklahoma overtime game. I'll take the Alabama-Ohio State game over this. But unfortunately, we don't get a lot of the good semifinals, so we're putting this one right up there because, for the most part, we get more of the LSU-Oklahoma game.
Correct. Fact. Anyways, my condolences, although I am happy Clemson won, and you don't understand.
No, you're happy that you covered.
Yes.
Let's get the facts right.
That's right. That's what I meant. Hey, you know, it adds up.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, people are like, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm fine. Like, it's not like the end of the world. Like, people, what are you doing here at work? Well, like, I got to work.
Yeah, but this is a place that would like allow it. It's like bereavement.
True.
You can take bereavement leave with your team losing.
At first, I was like, I'll be good. Not a whole lot going on. And I'm like, oh, wait. The two pods I'm doing today are gambling pods about college football. So now I have to give my little take. Sanford Stephen Bear asked me if I wanted to talk about it. I'm like, yeah, not really.
Okay. Well, at least you didn't pay a bunch of money for tickets and everything.
Like, I know, because I thought about going, and those flights were just way too expensive. That would have been brutal, because then the flight home, too. Like, I was in a bad mood flying back from Ohio, but at least it was quick little flights.
And the worst part about those is dealing with the other fans celebrating and not even getting in your face and taunting. Just around you, hear them cheering. I know that feeling. You want to, like, deck someone.
I got Michigan State fans coming at me. Like, what are you guys doing?
I left Fenway Park game two of the World Series. It wasn't even elimination, right? And, like, I don't get in fights, right? Like, I don't get in fights at games. And there was one guy I really wanted to hit in the street, like, walking left, leaving the game. And I was dead sober. I drove. It was just like, I was so upset because it was like two pitches that the Dodgers were right there. If they win game two, then they're going home. And I just, that one split second, all the other people celebrating, leaving the field, it is what it is, right? But, like, there's one guy who just got under my skin. He wasn't even taunting me. So I appreciate that.
I'm just glad that at least, like, most people aren't holding this against Ohio State. Like, and they lost to Florida and LSU for the national championship games. It was like being held against Ohio State for losing. I think this one at least.
This was not 31-0.
This one at least was, I think Ohio State got a lot of people's respect, especially what they were able to do to Clemson's offense. And I think if you're LSU, you're seeing if there's anything that you can take from that game, because they got physical with Clemson. And the schedule actually works out this year for Clemson getting that extra week, because I think they need it.
Absolutely. That they beat up each other, and I'm excited for this one. We'll get to this with John Murray in a little bit, but first, Matt Eumanns of VSiN.
Nobody has ever bet enough on a winning horse.
Feels like Clemson. They've been the winning horse for a long time, 29 straight wins, and Eumanns, we got there on the Tigers. Obviously a sweat and a lot of luck, but a winning ticket's a winning ticket.
Yeah, I'm not going to brag too much about that one. It was pretty lucky to get Clemson in the win column, but Tigers got there, and I've lost plenty of games this year. I deserve the win, so you don't give it back. And look ahead to the championship game. I thought what was interesting in that game was that Ryan Day did a great job. He and his staff really outcoached Dabo Swinney and Brim Venables, I thought, in the first couple quarters. And Ohio State dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, but the Clemson coaches really made good adjustments, had a couple key calls go their way, and took advantage of it. So you got to give Clemson credit for the comeback. You know, I really did not think it was going to happen in the second quarter. And, you know, I guess that's why Clemson's won 29 in a row.
Yeah, the breaks went their way, and you win 29 in a row, you got to get kind of lucky sometimes, and they certainly did, but great players and great coaches create their own luck as well, so you can only say so much. But what do you make of the initial line? It feels obviously pretty high, but, you know, that's the power rating, and that's what LSU's been doing to opponents.
Yeah, and it might go higher. You know, I remember talking to one bookmaker about, I'm going to say a month ago, why he thought the line would be if it was Ohio State, LSU, in the national title game, and he said Ohio State 3 or 3.5. I'm not sure he realized at the time that the game was being played at the Superdome. It's, you know, in LSU's backyard, and it's essentially like a home game for LSU. And, you know, I thought that number was probably going to be less than 3. And, you know, the way LSU has just dismantled defenses with this passing attack, I mean, it's really an NFL passing attack with Joe Brady coming over from the Saints. To just transform that offense. You think about Joe Burrow. Last season, the guy had 16 touchdown passes. He had 7 in the first half against Oklahoma. I mean, it is an amazing turnaround for the LSU offense. Not too many people are going to want to jump in front of this team at this point, especially on a fast track in the Superdome. But obviously, I think Clemson's defense is going to be the stiffest test that LSU has faced to this point. And, you know, the number sitting at 5.5 at some books, 5 or 5.5. If it actually climbs as high as 7, we get about 2 weeks to go before the game. You know, I talked to a couple bookmakers about this last 2 days. They're not ruling the possibility that it hits 7 at some point. If you like the dog, I would say just sit back and wait and see if it goes a little bit higher. If I bet this, I'll probably bet Clemson if it touches 7. You know, I might even take 6.5, if that's the best you can do. But it's tough not to bet on Trevor Lawrence and Dabo on a 29-game win streak getting 6 or 7 points in that game.
Yeah, I'm on the over already, just because I think the stupid field in Arizona messed with everyone's head. That game should have been well over the total. I think when you have, you know, they say, I don't know if they say this, but in my eyes, good offense always beats good defense. Because of just how good the offensive players are now. These huge receivers of Clemson and the quarterbacks are just so awesome now. It's just impossible to stop with the right scheming. And the field, I mean, Ohio State should have had like 35 points in the first half. But the field and some other things just cut it down. And we saw it earlier in the day with LSU. Now, I don't know what LSU's going to put up, but I just feel like this is a shootout. And I think Clemson learned the hard way. They can't mess around punting on 4th and inches. They can't have these stupid bubble screens all the time. You have to throw the ball downfield, trust your receivers, and I really trust the offenses in both this game. So you're right. The line does seem high, but I'm not about to get in front of this LSU train. I like the over, though.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. That's going to be a long, excruciating night if you bet the under, because that's not going to be any fun. So I would, for me, I would be, you know, it's 60. I see a 69 out there right now, and I cannot see that total dipping any lower than 69. So I think if you like that over, I would play that over 69 right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there. That's a good point. I do agree that the steam is going to push it up. So we've already talked about New Year's Eve bowl games. You're on ASU. Let's go to New Year's Day. This Michigan-Alabama, the handicap is fascinating. We know about the flat spot and all that stuff. I just think there's other sort of flat spots to support than betting against Alabama. So I don't want Michigan, but I'm also not laying the 7 either. You have an opinion there, though.
Yeah, I'm probably going to take Michigan +7. I haven't bet this yet. I wanted to see if there was going to be a 7.5 show up. I don't think that's going to happen. I'll probably play Michigan +7, but it's not my favorite bet left on the board just because what you said. You know, it's tough to bet against Bama. And, you know, it's also been tough to bet against Brady, Belichick, and the Patriots. And we're seeing that, you know, your thinking's got to change a little bit with that, too, because it's not the same Patriots team. And this is not the same Alabama team. You know, this defense has not been nearly as dominant. It's not Tua, a quarterback. Alabama's 3-7 against the spread in its past in bowls, typically laying more points than this, obviously. But, you know, the tide tends to not rise for, you know, games that are not high-stakes games. And you got to wonder, you know, I'm sure Nick Saban's going to do everything he can to motivate his team. And I'm surprised a guy like Jerry Judy's even playing in this game. You know, why would he play with what's at stake with his NFL draft status? I would you know, Michigan's got most of its stars playing too. So I think most big names are going to be on the field for this game on New Year's Day morning. From what I understand, you know, I've been reading a lot of stories about this. It looks like the Michigan players are pretty pumped up. They got humiliated once again by Ohio State. This is a chance to kind of erase the embarrassment of the blowout at the hands of the Buckeyes. I think it's going to be a tight game, and I'm leaning towards taking the points here. Like I said, it's not my best bet left on the board, but I do think the tide's going to be a little bit flat for this game. And without Tua and with a defense that's not up to Saban's standards of recent years, I think Michigan can hang in this and have a shot to win it.
Can't fault you at all for that logic and that line of thinking. It is a fascinating handicap, just given all the moving parts. And like you mentioned, no Tua. Let's go jump
to
the...
You know, Doug, I'll say this too. I want to add one thing, because you and I talked before the bowl season about the Big Ten. And, you know, some years the Big Ten's reputation is overblown, overhyped. I think the Big Ten's looked pretty damn good in this bowl season to this point. You know, you look what Iowa did to USC, just dominated physically in that game. What Ohio State was doing to Clemson. And it did make me think a little bit differently about Michigan. I don't like to make too much of conference affiliation. But, you know, you watch Michigan go head-to-head against Iowa and Ohio State, and I think you have to have a little bit more respect for the Big Ten, maybe in the bowls, than we have had in the past.
That's a great point. You're not exactly, like, putting a lot of stock in Penn State over Memphis. You're putting it more in, like, the Power Five. I agree with you. And that brings us to the Rose Bowl, which is Big Ten against Pac-12. And I like the Ducks. You like the Ducks. But there's a little pause I have, given how – it's not even that Iowa manhandled USC, because that was a tight game. It was a one-score game. Trojans had the ball, and then Keaton Slovis gets hurt. I'm not saying the USC would have won, but it wasn't as lopsided. Obviously, they looked completely inept after he got hurt, and they didn't even score another point to hurt my team total. But more importantly, I think Oregon's up to snuff. We saw it against Auburn, and so I'm comfortable with the Ducks here, even having seen what the rest of the Big Ten look like so far this bowl season.
Yeah, I think it's pretty evident that Oregon's a cut above the rest of the, you know, the Pac-12, and one team that did handle the Ducks was Arizona State as a two-touchdown dog in November. And, you know, I like Arizona State in the Sun Bowl, but, you know, if you look what the Ducks did to Utah in that 37-15 win in the Pac-12 title game, they made the Utes look slow and outmatched. You know, it really surprised me how slow Utah looked in that game. And I've seen Oregon in person this season. I was really impressed by the speed. So I think the Ducks have two advantages over the Badgers here. And one is speed, overall team speed. It's a really fast defense. They've got guys at the skill positions who are blazing fast. You know, Wisconsin, this is not a plodding Wisconsin team, but it's not in the same class with Oregon in terms of speed. And then the other advantage is Justin Herbert. Yes, he had a very disappointing final month of the regular season. I was really disappointed in the way he played. But still, you're talking about a guy who's an elite passer, going to be a top five or top ten NFL draft pick. And on the flip side, for Wisconsin, you have Jack Cohn, who's nowhere near Justin Herbert's league. Now, Jonathan Taylor and the Badgers are going to be able to run the ball. But I think one thing Mario Cristobal's done, and Cristobal's a really poor game manager, but he has made Oregon a lot tougher in the trenches. This is the most experienced offensive line in the country. The defensive line, and especially against the run, has held up really well this season. And I think that Oregon defense is just a little bit different than the rest of the Pac-12, and it's a much more physical defense. It's a faster defense. And I was just really impressed what Oregon did to Utah to make the Utes look slow in that Pac-12 title game. So, you know, I'm not disrespecting Wisconsin here, because, you know, I think we all had to be impressed by what the Badgers did against the Buckeyes in the Big Ten title game. But I like the Ducks here catching three, and I think the Ducks should win the game.
I agree with what Mario Cristobal's done, completely changing the identity. And I had to do a double take on this, and we do write-ups for ESPN Chalk. I know you do the NFL content. I only picked one bowl game for this week, and it was Oregon. They're ninth in the country in defensive efficiency. I remember writing mid-season, they had, I think, five straight unders. I was on them a couple times. I know the Stanford-Oregon game, I was on the under. That was like a 13-6 game or something ridiculous. But I've just been so impressed with in the trenches and everything. I think if Herbert Now, the problem with Herbert is he's super inconsistent. So if bad Herbert shows up, then so be it. We lose a bet. And like we talked about last podcast, you can't be afraid to lose a play. But if good Herbert shows up or even average Herbert, I think we got a fighting chance here, plus three. So I got to grab the points here. But and you're right, Cone, I'm not a big believer in. So we're good. I like the Ducks there. I want to go to the
You know what? He should not be inconsistent at this point in his career. The guy's a senior. And, you know, it's a little bit frustrating to watch the way he played in the last month of the season. So I'm expecting the good Justin Herbert to show up in this game. This Wisconsin defense is good, but it's not great. I mean, if you watch towards the end of the season, Purdue moved the ball up and down the field against Wisconsin. And if Purdue can do that, Oregon can do it. And don't forget, you know, the USC team that we were on that was a dead dog. And I was disappointed in USC's defense more than anything in that game. Yeah, Keaton Slovis got hurt, and that was the end of the Trojans' chances. But don't forget, Oregon went to the Coliseum and just embarrassed USC 56-24. That's when we all thought that was going to be the end of the Clay Helton era. So, like I said, I think Oregon's just you know, a level above those other bowl teams from the Pac-12.
Yeah, and if they had played, I don't know, Eastern Washington in the opener instead of Auburn, they'd be in the college football playoff. It's literally that simple. If they had one loss, even at ASU, they'd probably, even though it was late in the season, they'd probably be in the playoff. Probably. Now, some would say maybe losing to Oregon kind of like motivate. Who knows, right? Every team, like Clemson, nearly losing to North Carolina, obviously played a different brand of football. So you never know. You can't just operate in a vacuum and assume transitive property or whatever sort of property you want to assume. But they are, I think, the best team in the Pac-12. I thought Utah was all along. I think splitting hairs probably Oregon is. Either way, those two teams are cut above everyone else. So I'm not going to put too much stock in USC getting manhandled. We knew they were sort of a finesse team. We just thought they'd be so much more athletic than Iowa. And obviously the offense was clicking until Slovis got hurt. I want to go to the night game because this is a game you pegged very well a year ago, having Texas plus the points against Georgia. Double-digit dog win outright. And I think we're headed for a similar spot. Obviously, the lines come down here. But for me, I think Georgia's probably the right side because the line's already adjusted for the Bulldogs that are sitting out. And at five, I think Bulldogs, I think based on what happened last year in the exact same bowl, I feel inclined that they're going to not let that happen again.
Yeah, I talked to a handicapper I really respect a couple nights ago, and he said the same thing. I bet Baylor here at plus 7.5, and you actually could have got a better number at one point. When I saw it dropping, I went ahead and played this one early. You know, anticipating that Georgia was going to have some guys sitting out in this game, and Georgia's got, you know, like five NFL draft picks that are not going to play in this game, and that would be my counter argument to why this game's going to be different. I'm still not sure the Bulldogs care much about it. But, yeah, we saw a similar situation with Auburn. You know, the previous 2 years when Auburn showed up at a bowl game and didn't care and got beat and then came back last year and just demolished Purdue in a bowl game, Auburn had a point to prove. And, you know, maybe Georgia comes back and does the same thing here, and you can make the case that you're getting Georgia to, you know, a major discount. Last year when I took Texas, I was getting 13. You know, if you're going to take Baylor at this point, the best you can do is plus 5.5. So it's not like you're getting a bargain with the number if you're going to take Baylor. But John Murray of the Westgate, who's on your podcast all the time, you know, he does a show with me on Sunday nights. We were talking about this game. And, you know, Murray made a pretty good point about the Big 12 and Oklahoma. He's sick of seeing Oklahoma in the college football playoff. And Baylor probably would have put up a better fight against LSU because Baylor's so much better defensively than Oklahoma. And, you know, I agree with the line of thinking. Obviously, Oklahoma's offense is explosive, and we thought, you know, maybe the Sooners could trade scores with LSU. Baylor can't get in a shootout and trade scores. The good thing about Georgia, Bulldogs don't get in shootouts either. Kirby Smart is so conservative, it's ridiculous sometimes. And, you know, that tends to keep teams in games. Baylor is so much better defensively than Oklahoma. I think Baylor's defense is going to keep it in this game. And, you know, I would still lean to that side, but it's kind of hard to recommend a play at 5.5 when you could have had 7.5. So You know, basically you would have to
maybe in game
that size, or,
maybe yeah, in game, especially yeah, when the total's so low.
In game's always a very good suggestion too, because if Georgia scores first, you know, then you get a really good number on Baylor if you still like that side.
And you can also get a feel, because I knew you were on Texas last year. I watched the game, and within the first 3 minutes, I go, yeah, Georgia's dead. They don't want to be there at all. And I talked to Emmanuel Acho, who does a lot of work for here, used to play at Texas, and he said he was on the sidelines of that game, and he said right away you could just tell that Georgia didn't want to be there that game. So we, if we're looking to spot the flat spot, that's why in-game wagering is so valuable in bowl games.
No, that's a really good point, too. And, you know, I'll be watching that in the Alamo Bowl on New Year's Eve, because Texas is a 7-point dog to Utah, and we have to wonder, does Utah want to be there in that game? And I think it's also fair to wonder, does Texas want to be there in that game? Last year, Texas was in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia, really excited to be in New Orleans for that game, and looking to make a statement. You got to wonder, that's one of the trickiest games, I think, to handicap. You talk about bowl games and motivation. What's the motivation for Texas? What's the motivation for Utah in the Alamo Bowl on New Year's Eve? That's why the handicapping bowl games is a lot different.
And that's why I hate it at times. I mean, I'm really – I was telling someone last night, for the first time literally since grade school, I'm not in a bowl pool. And you and I talked about it in the first podcast, I wanted to try it this year. Just have kind of an open slate. Sometimes, you know, I can be impulsive. Sometimes, like right before kickoff, I'll get an itch for a game, or I'll have gleaned some wisdom talking to a lot of people, and that's sort of, I don't know, it works for me, right? Like, obviously, I want to grab good numbers throughout the week, but sometimes I haven't decided how I want to play. In-game is always an option, and I've done very well this bowl season. Now, it could be just I was ahead of the curve on some games, but I really feel not having preconceived notions, so to speak, is important, and if some people can separate it, some people can be in a bowl pool and then make a decision on a side or whatever. But it's human nature to have picked a 4-point favorite in your bowl confidence board or whatever, and that's less. That makes you maybe less likely to grab the points.
Yeah, that's there's some truth to that. No, you know, I've talked about that before. That's why I don't play fantasy football in the NFL. I don't want to be conflicted, you know, with bets and what I might need in fantasy football. So I haven't played that in 20-some years. But, you know, I did get a couple bowl pools last year, and I won one. So I got in some bowl pools again this year, and we did the best bets on VSiN. And I'm 5-1 on the bowl best bets so far. I went and graded my bowl pool last night, and I'm 10-11 against the spread through 21 games, so not as good.
Well, that's okay.
But, you know, I haven't tracked, you know, I haven't sat there and sweat out those picks game by game. I didn't even know what I picked in about half the games. I just went back and graded that last night.
Well, humans, I'm red hot in the baby bankroll bonanza with Murray. I've hit a middle last night in the final game of the regular season. I'm all fired up. I've closed the season, I think, 8-1 in our bowl, in our chalk column thing. So I've done really well in that, and I'm now like 500, so I'm respectable. let's go to the second. A lot of just randomness with these teams. I mean, it's just so funny that New Year's Eve and New Year's Day is some marquee programs. And then you have some other bowls, unless I'm missing one that caught your eye that you wanted to talk about in terms of your next play. But I know you're on Texas, ASU. We have talked on Oregon, Baylor, and Michigan. I want to at least get your opinion. Do you have anything on, like, BC, Cincinnati? I mean, I feel like the Bearcats should roll them, but I feel like that BC squad is frisky and always kind of bad beats me.
Let me see. I'll tell you who I picked in my bowl pool when I check it. I don't even know. That I took Cincinnati.
One more New Year's Day game I want to get your opinion on before we go to the other games. It's Minnesota-Auburn. Again, this comes down to effort and sort of like motivation. I feel like the over 53 is the right side. The Gophers obviously have a much more potent offense than you would envision. And I think the Tigers will light it up at times too, and maybe a building year for their true freshman quarterback, Nix, and into next season. So I like a springboard, I should say, not a building year, a springboard into next year. And I would lean over 53 here.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that play either. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I like that play. I also played Auburn -7. And, you know, you're right about Auburn. Bo Nix really improved. I was disappointed in him in the first, I would say, half of the season because, yeah, he played well in that comeback against Oregon. But if you look at the game as a whole, not that impressive. Bo Nix struggled on the road, you know, in that loss at Florida especially. Auburn played LSU to its toughest game of the season. That was 23-20 in Baton Rouge. I think a lot of people tend to forget that, but that's how good that Auburn defense
right.
can be. And, you know, Auburn did play a shootout against Alabama in that 48-45 game, but Bo Nix really improved, I thought, in the second half of the season. I watched some tape on him and some passing competitions before his freshman year at Auburn over the summer, and I said, man, this guy is incredible. He's going to be a future Heisman candidate. And then I watched him in the first half of the season, and I was, like I said, a little bit disappointed in the way he played. But, you know, you always have to keep in mind he's a freshman. He's playing against big-time defenses, and that's going to happen. But in the second half of the season, I think he played with a lot more confidence. And I really like the way this Auburn team finished the season. Minnesota is also, like you said, a team that can put up points. And that's why I would agree with your assessment of a shootout here. Minnesota, you know, against Penn State put up 31 points. You know, obviously you got beat 38-17 by Wisconsin in the final game of the Big Ten schedule. But Tanner Morgan is a really accurate quarterback. The Golden Gophers got some playmakers. They have more speed than they've had in the past. You kind of have to adjust the way you think about Minnesota because this is not a typical Minnesota team. P.J. Fleck done a great job in recruiting and a great job really developing this team. The schedule helped a lot. You know, let's not lie. Early in the season, Minnesota had to come back to beat South Dakota State, Fresno State, Georgia yeah. Southern, and didn't have to face Ohio State or Michigan. You know, caught a couple breaks on the schedule, and this team gained confidence because they kept winning, and they thought they were better than they really were. And then, you know, late in the season, lost to Iowa, lost to Wisconsin. I respect this Michigan team or this Minnesota team. Like I said, the Big Ten is a little better than I think most people will give it credit for this season. We've seen that early in the bowl season, but I like the way Auburn finished the season. I think Auburn's just better defensively, and we know with a freshman quarterback like Bo Nix, again, a lot of times it's cliche, but you talk about a springboard in the next season. I think Bo Nix is going to be fired up to have a big game here to propel him into 2020. And Gus Malzahn is just he's a really good play caller. I'm not sure why so many people criticize him. I think he's a damn good coach. I know he's a little bit quirky, and it's tough to be in the same state with Nick Saban and survive. But I think Malzahn's done a pretty good job, and I give Auburn enough edges here. I think Auburn can win this game by 10 points or double digits. You know, somewhere in that range, 10 to 14 points.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Maybe this is a teaser even. I know we don't I did a teaser earlier this year. I actually pushed it. I actually tied one of the sides, won the other. I think it was a Virginia game against some ACC team. Mm-hmm. Where these things are all freaking one score. But I don't do them very often in college, like one in the last 2 years. But I think this might be I feel comfortable in Auburn winning this game. I just don't know if Minnesota like lights it up and all of a sudden something along those lines. But this might be a money line parlay, even something along those lines, just to get a little action on New Year's Day in that early time slot.
You know, I never recommend college teasers, but, you know, if somebody wanted to disagree with the Michigan pick and said, I'm going to play Alabama and Auburn on a teaser, I wouldn't put up a fight against that. I think that might be a decent bet.
Yeah, same kickoff time as well. A little morning action on two games and root home the SEC teams in non-conference. I could see it being a high scoring. So I do like that Auburn-Minnesota game. Let's go to the next day. A couple other games. I know, you know, nothing really stands out. I think the Tennessee-Indiana is a little fascinating just given how the Vols closed their season. And the Hoosiers were frisky at times.
Indiana's legit. Tom Allen has done a fantastic job turning around that Indiana program. He's a high energy guy. He's kind of a maniac. At times he makes Jim Harbaugh look calm. I think Indiana's got obviously a pretty good chance to win this game, as you would suspect with a 2-point underdog. But Tennessee down the stretch had some really good wins. I mean, five straight wins. South Carolina, UAB, Kentucky, Missouri. Vandy, I just thought Tennessee got its act together there in the second half of the season. A lot of people were doubting Jeremy Pruitt big time, I would say, at about the midway point of the season. Tennessee, especially the quarterback play, improved a lot. The Vols, I thought, took a lot of momentum into the bowl season. And Indiana's a little bit of a banged-up team. I this is another one I think it could be similar to Minnesota and Auburn, where I think you could see points on the board here. I lean to Tennessee minus two, but I also like this game over the total of 52 because the Hoosiers can score, man. Indiana's got an offense. They can move the ball on the ground. They have competent quarterbacks. All right, Tennessee's quarterback play is much, much better than Indiana. I think it's comparable. I would expect a shootout here. I lean to Tennessee, but I also like over 52.
I'm right there with you. The only issue I would say is we had on the podcast, Aaron Renning, earlier this season. He brought up a great point about Indiana. He's like, some of their points are kind of fluky. They've had some misleading sort of point totals, I guess is what he was trying to say. So that's something to keep in mind. I would agree with that. I think that's fair. I was on him against Northwestern. So that is something that does concern me, so to speak.
Well, you have to kind of draw a line through the Northwestern games. I hate Northwestern games.
They're terrible. That was the handicap going into the Northwestern game.
Right, right. I think that was after Indiana had put up more than 31 points or more in five straight games going into that Northwestern game. And then that was kind of an ugly game. That was a weird game. Northwestern tends to get involved in some oddball type of games. I can't stand to bet that team. Think about this. Illinois is in a bowl game, and Illinois lost to Northwestern, you know, in its finale. And how sad is that? But, you know, Indiana in its final game of the season scored 44, beat Purdue 44-41. I don't think there's going to be 80 points in this game, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see 60 points in this game. I think 52 is a little bit of a low total.
And you mentioned Malzahn. I mean, I think there's a lot of Week 17 component overlaps with that in the bowl season. I mean, look at the Redskins were doing yesterday, just going for it midfield. I mean, there's a lot of that lends itself to the overs in these games too. And I think we can see some of that in these kind of, no offense, but unimportant bowl games.
You know, I've said that a lot too, because when the stakes are high, coaches tend to get conservative. And when there's nothing really significant at stake in a lot of these meaningless type of bowl games, there's no reason at all to be conservative, and teams can play loose. You'll see coaches gamble a little bit more. All that should lead to more points on the scoreboard and, you know, coaches taking more chances. I think you have to like the overs in some of these type of games.
I agree, but unless you're the bigger stakes, unless you're Kirby Smart in the SEC title game and faking a punt. So.
Exactly.
Anything else jump at you before we let you go?
No, that's about it. You know, some of these, it's kind of a weird bowl schedule. I'm disappointed that, you know, on New Year's Day, we've only got four games. You know, we've got a group of guys we're going to meet at the Westgate Superbook on New Year's Day to watch the games. And it seems like you used to have a better lineup on New Year's Day. You got two games to start at the same time and only four games total on New Year's Day. And then if you look at the bowl games after New Year's Day, it's kind of garbage. You know, until you get to Clemson LSU on the 13th. So, most of my best bowl plays are in the past, but I do like some of these games on New Year's Day, and hopefully they go my way.
All right, well,
I'm going to play,
enjoy
like I said, on New Year's Day, probably play Michigan plus +7. Actually, I see a 7.5 out there now, and that's what I was waiting for. Also, Auburn, Oregon, and Baylor on New Year's Day. So pretty much in action on every game on the 1st.
I'm with you, man. All right, good stuff as always, Matt. Happy New Year to you and the fam, and we'll talk to you in 2020.
Hey, you bet. Thanks, Doug.
Kicking is for losers.
Oh, mercy. Boy, is it ever, John Murray. And were you just cringing the entire, Fiesta Bowl on Saturday night? Because I certainly was.
Well, there are so many questionable coaching decisions. Even going back to the first quarter, Dabo Swinney opted to kick a 50-yard field goal on fourth down instead of just going for it, and his guy missed. I thought that was ridiculous. I don't understand why Ryan Day didn't go for two up by one, and I can't believe he punted. I also thought Clemson probably shouldn't have scored that touchdown right away. I mean, I know it's impossible to tell the kid not to run into the end zone, but they would have probably been better off not scoring a touchdown and kicking a field goal as time expired to win the game.
Yeah, and it's not like that was bad coaching to not tell him because he scored from like 50 yards out or something.
If you're inside the 20-ish, you're already communicating that.
But it's understandable not to have done that. But you're right. So the Ryan Day PAT thing, that's inarguable, even though there's some knuckleheads on Twitter saying, oh, you can't chase points. They just don't get it. I was thinking of even if they had scored the scoop and score at the end of the third, you would go for two to make it a three-point game. But either way, that was a mistake, inarguable. The other stuff needs to be discussed because I was complaining that they punted on fourth and four to even pin Clemson back. And people were like, no, you can't, because they only need a field goal to win. That's, you got to pin him back, make him go farther. I go, why? You can ice the game fourth and four. And I had money on Clemson. I was praying they punted.
I think if you were rooting for Clemson, you were very happy to see the punt team on the field there. And it's, you know, it's not like you just give them the field goal if you don't get the fourth down. Clemson still has to move the ball down the field no matter where they start from. And Clemson raced down the field to score that touchdown to go ahead. I was shocked. Ryan Day got way too conservative there. It really cost his team. I know everyone is talking about the officials, but I thought Ryan Day's conservative nature there down the stretch cost the team. But what really cost Ohio State was they should have been ahead by a lot more in the first half.
No doubt.
J.K. Dobbins dropping that pass. They had a perfect screenplay call set up. Dobbins could have walked into the end zone, and he dropped the ball, and they had to kick a field goal. They should have been ahead by a lot more.
I agree, and that would have made Clemson one-dimensional, and really it would have buried them.
Oh, there's no doubt. And then the targeting call seemed to really motivate Clemson to come back, and Trevor Lawrence is just a great, great college quarterback. He's amazing.
And Travis, as you said, about seven things all had to go Ohio State's way. Otherwise, the Buckeyes would have won.
If one thing goes the other way for Ohio State, they win the game. But guess what?
I agree with that. And I do think, too, that, you know, I'm sure there will be endless conversation about that over the next 14 days or about this. But this championship game line is crazy. You know, LSU beat or destroyed an Oklahoma team that had no business being in the college football playoff whatsoever. And Clemson beat an Ohio State team that was probably historically good, one of the best teams we've seen in college football the last few years. To act like LSU is considerably better than Clemson because they beat Oklahoma and Clemson struggled against Ohio State is ridiculous.
Is that the only reason LSU's laying five? Because to me, they went through the SEC West. They dominated a lot of teams. And as much as I want to say Clemson, because I thought Clemson was the best team in the country, I'm realizing LSU is probably the better team. And five feels like a lot, but it's not enough for me to run to the window and bet Clemson either.
I mean, we'll see. We'll certainly see. I do think it helps Clemson a lot that there's an extra week before this game because the Ohio State DBs totally manhandled those Clemson receivers, and it looked like both of them were banged up. I'm talking about T. Higgins and Justin Ross. And getting those guys back healthy is going to be crucial because LSU is going to put points on the board. It's just a matter of whether or not Clemson can match them. And in order to do that, they're going to need those two stud receivers to be healthy.
And the field conditions is what really bothered me the most because both teams were affected and it was stupid. And I had the over and I never got a chance because of it. So I'm actually psyched about the dome in New Orleans being a clean surface, much like we saw in Atlanta. And I think the speed's going to benefit both teams. How much does that impact the line, maybe the total for you?
Well, we put up about as high of a total as we could come up with for that game. I think right now we're at like 70, just something 70. Comical. 70, 70, 71, 70 right now. I think we opened at 71, though. I was trying to find it in my notes. But right now we're at 70. I don't know how you can go much higher than that. But, you know, we took big bets on the over in both of the semifinal games. And what really saved our day on Saturday was the Fiesta Bowl going under. I'm sure we're going to need this game to go under as well. So you almost can't set the total high enough.
I don't think you have any chance of this game going under. I mean, I say that, obviously. You know what I mean. I just feel like and Clemson learned the hard way. They're going to need to put up points. They can't be punting on fourth and inches like Dabo did and some of the other stuff. They're going to have to throw the ball downfield. And that's what bothered me the most was the underneath chucking and little bubble screens, and they just didn't throw the ball downfield at all. Until later.
I just hope I hope people remember this next year because I know what's going to happen next year right around late November, early December. It'll be the same thing. The SEC is overrated. There's a bias towards the SEC. They're going to let two SEC teams in there. It's so unfair. People will be making a case for whoever's in the Big 12 or the Pac-12. Just stop it already. I mean, if we're going to do a 14 playoff, it should be Clemson, two teams from the SEC or two teams from the Big 10, and we move on. Because Oklahoma has no business being in this field,
I think Oregon could have easily played in the college football playoff and belong.
I liked Oregon too, but they lost
conference generalizations. I think there was years the SEC was really down.
What year was that?
The year after the Manziel and Connor, the year that Ole Miss got boat raced by TCU in their bowl game. And
I'm not talking about the non-playoff games. I'm talking about.
No, I'm just saying. Well, no, hold on. So, like, there are teams that there are years that were like the SEC is not the end all be all. There are years, and also we just
I said
don't
SEC
know.
Or Big Ten should get two teams in. I didn't say just SEC.
Well, it just depends.
But I hear every year about overrated.
Well,
the
hold
SEC.
On. I thought Oklahoma a couple years ago was awesome, and they just lost in overtime to Georgia. I thought that team. This team stunk down the stretch. This team reminded me of the Florida State team. That they were the defending champs, where they basically were escaping wins. Now, not to the same degree where they were trailing at halftime every week like that Jameis Winston Seminoles team was. But Oklahoma, this particular year, I mean, so what? You should have put Georgia in as the fourth team? It was just one of those years where three teams were the best, were in the discussion, not anymore.
I agree with that, but seven straight times now, Oklahoma in a postseason game with a chance to win the national championship has lost. And a lot of those games, they got completely blown away. So I'll be annoyed next year when I have to hear about how good they are after they hang 60 points on TCU or something.
So who would you have put in the fourth team this year?
I don't know. I mean, It's a question of who's the most deserving or who's the best team. Oklahoma is probably neither.
What were their power ratings?
Well, the SEC teams were better than them. Georgia was better than them. Alabama was better.
Right, but you have to if Georgia just lost on a neutral in December, like to a team that's going to the playoff.
To LSU.
Like, right, but you have to put some. You can't just make it all power ratings. You have to put some repercussions.
I get what you're saying.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think Oklahoma's better than Georgia, but I'm saying you have to at least value the games.
They had to fill out a bracket of four, and I get that. I'm just saying I think people are overreacting a little bit. Clemson played a really historically one of the better Big Ten teams we've seen in recent history. And LSU played an Oklahoma team that had no business being in the college football playoff. So just keep that in perspective as we move towards the championship game.
My only counterpoint to that is this Oklahoma team was not the previous two Oklahoma teams with the number one overall draft pick and the Heisman Trophy winner. Those two teams were really good.
Okay, that's true, but the one last year was down 21-0 at the end of the first quarter in their playoff game. I mean, I know what you're saying, but
I'm just kind of tired of it. So there was only two good teams last year. That's my point. And obviously Georgia was good, but if they had played Clemson, they might have won. Just the randomness of outcomes, right?
Anything's possible, I guess. I'm just venting because I'm tired of seeing Oklahoma in the playoff. I don't even have a problem with Oklahoma. I really don't. It just seems like every year they're getting in, they're just getting blown away, and it's just enough.
I'm with you. I thought they certainly belonged 2 years ago, the year they lost to Georgia. They actually had
that team. I agree with you, and that was probably, very possibly, the best game of the college football playoff era. You're talking about the Rose Bowl, Oklahoma, Georgia.
No defense.
That Ohio State Clemson game on Saturday night was a pretty special game, and I'll tell you what, the Redskins are going to be picking second in the draft. Everybody's talking about Chase Young going to the Redskins. I was looking at Jeffrey Okuda, the corner from Ohio State. That guy is a great player, man. He manhandled those Clemson receivers. He's awesome.
I'm not sold on Chase Young. I'm not.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with you.
All right, my friend, let's spin it forward here to these games coming up. Obviously, we have a bunch of bowl action today. We'll start with tomorrow. The old motivation question, Florida State, Arizona State. Herm Edwards is going to have his guys ready. Will the Seminoles be ready?
Yeah, this is a really, really one-sided ticket count. Right now, it's our second most one-sided ticket count of the bowl season. That's kind of been fluctuating between this and the Citrus Bowl. But everybody's on Arizona State here in the Sun Bowl. Arizona State's a four-point favorite, and it looks like we're going to need the Seminoles pretty big on Tuesday morning.
Yeah, it's the first game. It's a 11 a.m. kickoff out there on New Year's Eve. Are people firing drinks that early at 11 a.m.? I actually don't remember because I was never at the book that early on New Year's Eve.
Oh, they definitely are. In fact, I would say that on New Year's Eve, we see more of those guys firing early than we do on New Year's Day.
Sure.
New Year's Day, when you have those morning games, it's really a sparse crowd in here because everybody's still recovering from the night before. I would say there'll definitely be people in here for the 11:05 Sun Bowl game, and I would imagine, they'll probably have a cocktail in their hand. I'll be working, of course, Doug.
Of course. You're all business out there.
Always, man.
I was a little disappointed. It wasn't like when I was in your office, there wasn't Mad Men-esque brandy station on the side.
the Globe Bar. That's like in Inglorious Bastards. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on that in the new year. That'll be a goal I'll set for myself.
You need a Burkhart globe or something.
Good idea, actually.
The big question tomorrow night, and Texas-Utah, everyone talks about these big-name programs that are disappointed, like Georgia last year in the Sugar Bowl. Mm-hmm. Is Utah excited to play Texas, given they were a whisker away from the college football playoff?
And they just watched Oklahoma get crushed, and they're thinking to themselves, boy, that really should have been us. Now, they lost to Oregon. They don't have a beef. But I know what you're saying. If you play for Utah, how could you not be thinking to yourself, man, we could have done a lot better than Oklahoma did. That was embarrassing. And I don't know how excited Texas is going to be there either. So, you know, honestly, last year they win the Sugar Bowl. I think a lot of people were expecting big things from them in 2019. I don't think either of these programs is going to be too thrilled to be playing in the Alamo Bowl on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, and no discredit to Utah. I've been very impressed with what Kyle Whittingham's done over the years, but I'm just talking the marquee teams that really have aspirations every year. Now, Utah had those aspirations, so I'm saying they are up. They are a candidate for a flat spot. Let's just put it that way. But it will be interesting to see how it all unfolds, per se. Okay, let's go to New Year's Day, because that gives us our listeners a little buffer between now and when they might download and listen. Michigan-Bama is fascinating, and I've said this on the pod before. I think it's worth repeating. Jeff Davis over at Caesars said Pitt-Eastern Michigan should have higher limits than Michigan-Alabama, because we know what we're getting with Pitt and Eastern Michigan, but we don't know what we're getting with these marquee, even though they're marquee programs.
It's a good quote out of Davis. Davis is a very quotable young man, I've noticed. And I mentioned earlier. Yeah, he is. And I mentioned earlier that there's two games that have kind of been fluctuating as our most lopsided take count. This is the other one. Alabama, extremely one-sided take account to the Crimson Tide. I don't really know what we're going to get from Alabama in this game, but the bettors seem confident that they do, and they are unloading on Alabama here at the Superbook. All the big bets are on that side, and a lot of parlays are either with Alabama or with Alabama on the money line. So we'll need Michigan and Coach Harbaugh pretty big on the morning of New Year's Day.
I certainly understand the handicap to back Michigan in terms of the flat spot, but I just think there's better flat spots to bet on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get the concept of it, but I want no part of the Wolverines, because I think Nick Saban's going to find a way to push the right buttons.
Well, they could put it on them like they did to Michigan State a few years ago, if you remember that game. It was kind of a very similar situation where Alabama obviously was disappointed in not be playing for a national championship, because that is their standard at Alabama. And I think it was the Outback Bowl.
Yes.
And they just destroyed Michigan State. Could Alabama do that? Do they have the players to do that in the Citrus Bowl? I think so. Absolutely.
I was actually just going to tell a story. I was living in Vegas. This was a decade ago or so, and I was at an establishment that you might be familiar with. And I was with some friends, and because remember, the local news had to work late into the night, right? We had a fireworks show, and by the time I get out of there and all that, take off the tux. So the game started early. We were still out, and I remember firing on that game.
That doesn't surprise me, given your run out here. That's a very
I didn't get out of work to win the wee's out.
You're off work. I mean, you did your job. You're living the American dream. You did your job. You worked, and then you went to play.
I was on air at midnight. We had reporters stationed throughout the strip. For those who don't know, it's a big thing. The Vegas fireworks on top of all the strips. We have reporters all throughout the strip, kind of like a mini Times Square. And, you know, all the crowds are out there, obviously. We have reporters at different spots at Caesars and everything. So it's a big thing. And I usually don't go out, but that was the one year my brother was in town and stuff. So it was a lot of fun.
Is there anything worse, by the way, than the strip on New Year's Eve? Not a fan.
No, that's what Desert Inn is for, though, as you very well know. DI skips the strip.
The worst. We'll need Michigan pretty big here. And I think it's just a question of motivation. And Alabama, like, if you're Jerry Jeudy, why would you play in the Citrus Bowl when you're going to be a top five pick?
Sounds like they are, though.
There's so much. Even 2 days, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon, even 2 days from the game, there's just a lot of unanswered questions about this one.
What would this line be during, like, the regular season on a neutral? 13?
I think it'd be closer, at least 14.
Even without Tua, 14?
Yeah, that's true. No, Tua. I mean, that 14 does sound a little high. Let's call it 14. I'd be comfortable with that as a number.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. So look at the adjustment you're making, right?
This number, it's absolutely baked in there that we don't know what the hell we're going to get out of Alabama, the same way the Sugar Bowl number, it's very baked in there that we don't know what the hell Georgia's going to do, although it does sound like a lot of their guys are not going to play.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to – we'll go to that Georgia game. So it's New Year's Day. We'll just skip around a little bit. I actually think this line's cheap, and I understand why it's come down, but I don't think Georgia's going to go and lay an egg in back-to-back years in the same bowl game. I think last year's egg was understandable. I think it's actually helping the Georgia handicap.
You think that they won't want to have this happen to them again?
Well, look, you don't get to play football at Georgia because you're, like, lazy and, like, don't have a competitive edge. I think – having done that, like, we talk about revenge games all the time in college hoops and stuff like that. Like, I think they want to, like, undo last year's mess. If I were playing, I would want to. Now, they're shorthanded.
Yeah,
they have a lot of guys not
guys,
playing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I get what you're saying, but what about the guys that have an agent in their ear telling them they're going to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft?
That's different. So, I understand guys not playing, and there's certainly reports of guys not playing in the game, and you can't counter that at all. But I'm just saying it was a giant flat. Like, they didn't want to be there. You can tell from the start. Like, right kickoff, they just didn't want to be there.
No, I agree with you.
And I think there's going to be more competitiveness in Georgia this year than we saw last year because it's the same bowl game and because of how last year went.
I could see that. I mean, again, it's so many ifs and buts. And it just, to me, it's a tough game to bet. Right now, the money is pretty split. There's actually a few more tickets on the Baylor side talking about straight bets. Of course, a lot of those bets came in at +7.5 and +7,
right,
numbers that are long gone, obviously. So don't read too much into that. But we're at 4.5 right now. Very low total, too, 41.5. Did have one respected player went under 42 in that game for the limit. So a little bit of sharp money to report on the Sugar Bowl.
Any other sharp money on New Year's Day?
We saw sharp money on Oregon +3.5 in the Rose Bowl against Wisconsin. I'd imagine that'll be the biggest handle game of the day, although there is so much money on Alabama that maybe not. But, that's usually the biggest handle game of the day, the Rose Bowl. And I would expect a pretty good crowd for that game. Starts at 2:05 out here, so the people finally will be awake and will be here by then, most people.
Yeah, I like the Oregon side. Getting the 3 is key there. I didn't realize it had gone up to 3.5.
It had been at 3.5.
Okay.
It's at 3 now.
I missed that a long time ago then. So then it went to 2.5 and it's back up to 3 then.
It was at 2.5 as well. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's darted around a little bit, and there's people that have bought it to 3.5, bought it to 2.5. So for the most part, this number's been at 3.
Fair enough. Okay. Look, Big Ten's looked great. Obviously, Ohio State looked great. Iowa looked good against USC. The injury helped, certainly. But Big Ten's looked good, and it'll be interesting to see how Minnesota do and Wisconsin does. And then obviously we saw Penn State light up an inferior opponent, though, so you can't put too much stock in that.
True.
Okay, so that covers New Year's Day. And the bowl games after, what kind of sharp stuff do you have?
The only other thing I can really report is actually from New Year's Eve, there was a sharp play on Kentucky. They're playing Virginia Tech in the Belk Bowl. That game's really early Tuesday morning, by the way. But we did have some sharp play there. A guy we respect played the Kentucky side there. I can see it. I mean, I know Virginia Tech, I doubt they're going to be super pumped to be in the Belk Bowl. Their arch rival, Virginia, is going to be playing in the Orange Bowl tonight because Virginia beat Virginia Tech. Or that would be Virginia playing Florida tonight in the Orange Bowl. So you can't imagine the Hokies are too stoked to be playing in that game.
Yeah, makes sense. That was the big, what was it, the Commonwealth Cup was their big thing?
Yeah, the Commonwealth Cup, and I think Virginia Tech had won it 15 or 16 years
15.
In a row, and they finally have the streak ended, and the winner of the game had the right to get slaughtered by Clemson in the ACC Championship game, but the treat was whoever lost to Clemson got to go play in the Orange Bowl in Miami. It's a really big deal for UVA, and I think it would have been a pretty big deal for Virginia Tech. They haven't been there in several years, but the last time they were in the Orange Bowl, I think, was when they lost to the Jim Harbaugh, Andrew Luck, Stanford Cardinal.
Ooh, I remember
that.
Was
a long time ago.
Yeah.
I was at that game. So certainly that would have been a big deal for the Hokies, and I don't know how motivated they're going to be playing Kentucky in the Belk Bowl.
Yeah, well said. Well said. But the situation, just the magnitude of the bowl game might interest them. Anything else tickle your
Not
fancy?
Not really. Nothing
from the,
yet.
From the
I mean, everyone's... You know, everyone's just looking at the New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, and then obviously everybody's betting on LSU. So there hasn't been too much to report in terms of those, like, those weird bowl games that happen between the New Year's Day games and the national title game. Hasn't really been much interesting stuff there yet.
Yeah, it's funny. New Year's Eve and New Year's Day have like a slew of kind of marquee programs. And then after the weekend, starting Monday, it's kind of like ho-hum, like, you know, some of the teams involved.
Yeah, the best game's probably the FCS championship game between James Madison and North Dakota State.
Yeah.
To me, that's much more interesting than any of these smaller Division I bowl games.
And I mean that, but like starting tonight, I said I kind of misspoke. Starting tonight, you have, not like Virginia and Florida. I don't know. Those are big programs. It's just kind of funny how some of these games are buried opposite other teams or other games.
Mm-hmm.
Like Michigan, Bama is going on opposite another bowl game. But how would Michigan, Alabama like look tonight in primetime at 8 p.m.?
Oh, I mean, if that was the Sugar Bowl game, then that would be by far the biggest handle game of New Year's Day, and it wouldn't even be close. So, yeah, the time slot's something you always have to take into consideration when you're talking about handle. Our biggest handle game of the NFL weekend is going to be Seattle-Philadelphia because it's the last game, and all the parlays will run to that game. And it would be the same thing on New Year's Day. If Alabama was playing in primetime, every parlay on the board would be closing with either Alabama -7 or Alabama moneyline.
Gotcha. All right, my friend. Great stuff as always, Mr. Director. We will talk in the new year, the new decade. How does that sound on Thursday with the NFL podcast?
Yes, sir. Wild card weekend preview, and then looking forward to talking a little bit more about the national championship game. Can't wait for that Clemson-LSU game. I think it's going to be an awesome game. Three really great teams this year in college football. Two of them are left, so I'm very excited about that game.
Yeah, me too. And by the way, big move in the Bonanza. Big move.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I can't wait to get into how they didn't call pass interference on that play, too. I don't know why. They made us sit through how many pass interference reviews, and then they finally have one. It was clearly a penalty, and it determines four different teams' playoff seedings. And they just go, it's fine. Let's go to the next play.
Big move in the Bonanza. That's all I'm going to keep saying. good stuff, as always, my friend. Really appreciate it. Happy New Year to you and the fam. And give my best to everyone back there in the offices. And we'll see you on. We'll talk to you on Thursday in 2020.
All right. We'll talk soon, man.
Pay that man his money.
Well, we certainly hope that's the case moving forward with some of the plays we gave out on the podcast. Don't forget, we have more bets posted on ESPN.com's chalk section. Look forward to that. And obviously, Daily Wager. We're going to take a couple days dark. So I'm not back on the show until Thursday, which is 2020. So a couple days off for me, separate from this podcast. Travis, we'll do a podcast on Thursday in the NFL. I want to see more energy out of you. No,
so I will be here for Thursday.
Okay.
We're probably going to be doing a pod the following week for the National Championship game. Find a producer. I'm not producing the LSU-Clemson game.
Well, how about this? We will be doing a joint pod with the NFL playoff games, and we'll sneak in some college.
I like that.
We'll sneak in, then you can leave the room.
The one thing I do want out of the National Championship game, I want the loser to lose all rights of saying Death Valley is their stadium.
Ooh.
You both claim it. Yeah. Put it on the line.
It's funny. LSU, my opinion, gets more claim to it, but you're right.
I agree. But
Tigers and Death Valley.
You both have
something's
it.
Should the losing school also change mascot?
You can keep the mascot.
Okay.
But I want Death Valley taken. You can no longer use it. That's what I want out of this game.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I don't think it'll be done, but I like your thinking.
Not with that attitude, but.
All right, so Thursday NFL podcast. Next week we'll do a joint effort. What do you think? Does that make sense?
I like that.
Do a small cut. Yeah. Because the NFL games are obviously
limited.
Fewer, right. Yep. So we have four games this weekend, four games the following
Perfect.
Weekend. All right, bud. You have a happy new year, and we'll see you in 2020. And thanks to everyone for, we obviously appreciate the loyalty here on the podcast.